Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3 or 4 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is December 21st, and I thought we'd kick off with Brent crude. It's up $2.39 today, and bouncing from the region of the 1,000-day moving average and the upper side of the underlying range that's been forming now for the last almost 7 years. So, this does beg the question: is this a sustainable low? And by that, of course, it means not just simply a short-term low, but is this the bottom of the Brent crude correction? So there's a couple of different, I think, factors to think about. The one that I think is most important in the short term is that China's buying oil again, and they're trying to reopen their economy into the face of a mounting crisis with regard to COVID. But the rest of the world has plenty of experience with this. And we know what happens, that the number of infections will peak reasonably quickly within the next 10 weeks or so. And then the number of infections will decrease, the number of people with acquired immunity will increase, and then some semblance of normal life will return. So, China is now buying more LNG from Russia than it has before. It's also increasing its imports of both oil and coal. So, those are important because China is the biggest importer of fossil fuels. Then you have the additional fact that the Biden administration in the USA is now buying for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So, one of the factors that contributed to the decline in prices over the last 6 months has been selling from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Now they're acquiring. But buying at these levels is helping to support higher values. And it pretty much makes a nonsense of selling high, buy low. So then, of course, we should be thinking about, well, isn't the USA now an oil exporter, or at least an energy exporter? And if that's the case, perhaps they have a vested interest in ensuring that prices remain higher for longer. And this is an additional knock-on effect of the biggest consumer in the world turning into a net exporter. So the US now has a vested interest of ensuring that prices don't go too low. But gasoline prices have been pulling back, and the national average price for gasoline is back at a reasonable level. So there's a lot less angst about paying an average of $3 rather than closer to $5. And we're back inside the range. Or at least coming back down into, it's almost exactly, in fact, the same as coming back into the upper side of this range. So a lot of the climate activists don't want to see prices come too low because that would then rob them of the incentive to push people into alternative fuel vehicles, for example. So there's both a push and a pull. To ensuring the prices stay somewhat higher. But higher energy prices overall have historically been associated with slowing economic growth. But that was always on the assumption that it was going to be an import cost. When a country is exporting, then higher prices might actually be a tailwind for economic growth. So it's certainly something that's important to consider for the USA as it's a new factor. And higher for longer energy prices are certainly not a good deal for major importers like Europe or India or China. Then, of course, we have the additional question about how willing will OPEC be to increase supply, because we are heading into a tightening liquidity environment. And the yield curve spreads are still negative, but starting to contract. Now, this is, I think, especially important because there are really two phases to, or excuse me, there are three phases to an inverted yield curve. The first is the initial inversion, and that is usually greeted with somewhat better performance by stock markets because investors are more concerned that the Fed is actually doing something to control inflation. And then we have the period that we're in at the moment where prices are generally reasonably steady. Now, this has not been the case this year. There has been significant volatility in the period between March and now, where we've seen lots of assets pull back in a violent manner, and also not just in stocks, but also in bonds simultaneously. So that's been a rather odd situation because normally asset prices go on one good last run following the initial inversion. But of course, we didn't really see the yield curve go above 150 basis points on this occasion, which is really modest. And now we are starting to see that the yield curve could be moving towards the third phase, which is when it goes back above zero and then trends up through 50 basis points, because that historically has been associated with some of the worst selling pressure on stocks, because central banks don't generally cut interest rates until they have to. And higher energy prices, well, they'll benefit part of the economy, but the reality is that higher interest rates overall don't have a beneficial effect for everyone. So it's, I think, important to monitor the yield curve spread because if for any reason it pops back above zero and continues to trend higher, then the risk of an additional decline in stocks is quite high. Now, at the moment, we're seeing that the short-term oversold condition is being unwound, and we have a second positive day for the Nasdaq. But it was a little oversold in the short term, having had five consecutive days on the downside, and also pausing here in the region of 11,000, where it has found support on a number of occasions already. So we may see a modest rebound here. I do think it's rather unlikely that prices are going to push up through the 12,000 level. There was also some positive earnings in here today, where investors were willing to give the benefit of the doubt to cost cutting and price increases. So Nike stabilized around the $100 level yesterday and then popped on the upside in here today. So that's a good sized upward dynamic from the $100 area, and now the price is testing, or really it's above the 1,000-day moving average and back above the 200-day moving average. Now, this is a really important pivotal point because we don't generally see the 200-day trading below the 1,000-day during secular bull markets, and we can go back a long way before we see anything that's approaching that. In fact, it was in 2009. So, Nike continuing to find support in this area is certainly rather important. Then it's worth looking at FedEx. So, FedEx popped on the upside initially, and that was solely on the fact that they've been able to cut costs and raise prices, but volumes aren't hitting new highs, that's for certain. So the share popped on the upside initially, but then started to come back down. Now, we're certainly in an environment where housing prices are starting to roll over. Housing starts are certainly trending downwards. Interest rates are really at highs that haven't been seen in years. mortgage rates are problematic for anyone trying to sell a house. So we're likely to see liquidity continue to get drained out of the system. Inflationary pressures haven't disappeared, but they will certainly moderate. And there has been a substantial rewriting of some of the job gained figures that were brought out. So instead of over 1 million jobs having been brought into the market back in June, it's been revised downwards to about 1,000. So that's a really significant revision, and we're definitely seeing that these jolt figures, where I think a lot of investors have been wondering about just how high can these figures stay, and are they really reflective of the number of jobs available? Well, when you're seeing employment figures being overstated by such a large amount, there's the realistic possibility that these job opening figures are also rather overstated. Now let's think then about the wider environment, because the 10-year yield has steadied in the region of the 3.5% level, and it was down a tad in here today. But 3.5% was the peak from back in June of this year, and the drawdown from that level is relatively similar sized to what we've just seen. And if we flip it around and look at prices, just at a price ETF, we've also seen that there's been a clear unwinding of the short-term oversold condition, and now it's starting to pull back once more. So we're not yet at the end of the Fed's tightening cycle. So all I see in stocks is the potential for a little bit of an unwind of the short-term oversold condition, and probably not much more than that. And I think there's a lot of positioning going on right now because we're approaching the last trading week of the year. So if anyone wants to try and pull off a positive return for the year, then the time to do that is shrinking rather quickly. Now, the VIX index was down in a pretty dynamic manner in here today, based upon what was really a modest move in stocks. So, because we have gone through a very inert, or excuse me, a very volatile period, and then followed by a reasonably inert period of trading, that's starting to move the metrics in terms of how volatility is calculated. And what I find particularly interesting is that the VIX index went down at the same time that the S&P went down. So what we definitely saw was less demand for hedges, even though prices were contracting. And that would suggest that either investors are already long and don't need and are long of puts and don't need to buy more, or there's no real urgency because we're approaching the end of the year and there's less liquidity in the market. I would suggest that there's the real potential that we could have a pop in volatility in the week between Christmas and New Year, because that's not at all unusual. We often see that whatever trends are going to start at the beginning of the next year begin in the couple of days before the New Year starts. And I think the VIX coming back into an area of support would suggest that there will be additional surprises on the downside. Now, with the big move we had yesterday in the yen was reasonably steady in here today, but certainly not moving in a dynamic manner 2 days in a row. The dollar index was a little bit steadier and still holding the move below the 200-day moving average. Gold, having been up about $30 yesterday, was in mildly negative territory in here today. I've accepted the invitation to go to the Future Minerals Forum in Saudi Arabia in the second week of January again for 2023. And I've arranged a couple of meetings with gold CEOs, and I'll be interested to hear what they are thinking about the broader environment, particularly with a view to the rising cost of production, because energy prices might be beneficial for exporters, but they're certainly not, it's certainly not great news for mining operations. So the GDX, though, is still steadying here in the region of the 200-day moving average, and certainly taking its cue now from gold rather than oil. Now, when we look at the wider market here, nickel prices continue to stabilize. And I think when we look at this weekly chart, it really does help to highlight how much of a move we've had off the lows in the middle of this year, having found support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Doesn't look like much when we just simply look at it on the daily basis, but prices have just about doubled. So there's still very clearly a sequence of higher reaction lows for nickel. And copper prices remain really quite steady. So I think investors are beginning to place their bets that China's economy will open up, and that the supports that have been put in place will help to support the stock, the both the stock market, but particularly the property market, and then that there will be more fiscal spending, and that that will contribute to demand from the infrastructure sector. So copper continues to steady here. Now, lithium carbonate prices, and we are, and there is a hydroxide future now. Well, they've been at exceptionally high prices, and they're not really coming down. So there's been a lot of money invested in new supply, but it's the demand is still outstripping supply. And I think this is one of the biggest problems for the mining sector, that it's possible to increase lithium supply. It's rather difficult to increase nickel or copper supply. And then I've seen these articles where we can see, for example, that if we just put up the news for Volkswagen, they're building a hydrogen car or a fuel cell car that will have a range of 1,200 miles, which is rather a lot. And then we have a company that has got a low valuation and a share price that is still trending downwards and was in negative territory again in here today. And then Toyota is still wedded to the battery electric model, but then they're also trending downwards here. But they're talking about a haulage vehicle that is already going through or has been through testing in the real world and is performing on par with a diesel haulage vehicle, and that's under full load. So it does suggest, at least to me, that hydrogen is about the closest in terms of performance that we can approach when it comes to trying to get around the need for gasoline and diesel. Now, of course, there are obstacles to both manufacturing hydrogen and then on top of that, storing it. But those are technological problems that, with sufficient money, urgency, regulation, can probably be fixed. But when it comes to building motors and electricity generation capacity, then it's hard to do that without a lot of copper. And copper is not a technology problem, it's a physical problem. So I do think that there is certainly the potential that eventually the world will come around to the notion that Fortescue Metals probably has the right idea, and that it's not just about batteries, but that hydrogen is just simply going to have to be part of the ultimate solution to the reliance on fossil fuels and emissions. So I think that there's a budding theme here, and there's going to be a lot of investment in this sector. We're certainly looking at greater involvement by government, and most particularly in terms of regulations, because obviously hydrogen is highly flammable, and it's a very small atom and or a very small molecule, and it does tend to be or it does it's a difficult thing to contain because it's so small. So then the bigger question is going to be, where's the infrastructure going to come from for storage? And one of the issues with building small modular reactors is that a lot of the fuel for these new reactors comes from Russia. So the timeline for demonstrator projects has gone up by about 2 years simply because they can't get fuel. And one of the big issues is that as interest rates rise, the duration of solutions to problems goes down. Now, there is really hopeful and potentially transformational solutions out there in terms of energy. But when you rely on Russia for your fuel, then that pushes out the duration, and higher interest rates demand shorter duration solutions. Hydrogen is also a longer duration solution, but because it's more technology based rather than physically based, there's the potential that that duration could be shortened. But of course, the shortest duration of them all is coal, because we know where it is, we know where to get it, and let's see if we can find the price. And we know what it takes to burn it. So coal prices are still reasonably steady here. And having pulled back for a few weeks have rebounded. And this is the benefit of a short duration solution. And then I think these are some of the issues that are going to be addressed in 2023, that investors are going to start coming around to the idea that we need solutions to problems today. And that's a really big issue for the long duration promises, that you can make money if you invest with us, but you have to give it to us for the next 10 or 20 years and don't bother about the returns. That works when you've got zero interest rates and money is floating around. But when money is less available, that kind of problem doesn't fly. And I think that's going to bring home one of the old adages from the market, and it's the definition of an asset that's down 90%. It's one that was down 80% and halved. And I do think there's the potential that some of these longer duration type operations are going to have big declines in 2023. But and a halving from current levels is a big decline, even though they're already down 80%. And this is one of the issues that when you start getting down into base formations, even when prices have bottomed, you tend to see outsized volatility. That creates traders and kills off investors. And that leads to a change in the psychology of the market. And I think that is what we can probably expect for 2023. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.